Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. This hour is brought to you by Car Toys. And a reminder, you now have radios in your homes, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. You know, I've read that copy for the smart speakers 1,000 times, Stacy. It just occurred to me, like, how strange is that first line when I say, remember, you now have radios in your homes. Like, for most of the 20th century, people had radios in their homes. And they used to actually sit there and listen to them. And now, in 2020, I have to, like, remind people of that because it's, like, this new thing. Like,
have you heard of radios? Let me tell you about them.
Radios.
What?
Talking radios. Smart speakers. Man, the only difference is that now you can just talk to the radio and say, play 710 ESPN Seattle, as opposed to, like, going woo-woo on the dial and everything. But, yeah, keep that in mind. 710 ESPN Seattle on your radios and your smart speakers and et cetera, et cetera. You want to talk some Joey Hunt here?
I sure do.
You want to talk some center play here? Joey Hunt's been the savior for this team. Okay, mind you, he absolutely has been. He's risen to every challenge when called upon, and now we're going to talk about him. Know your Seahawks.
This is Know Your Hawks. Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile.
Brought to you by DivorceLawyersForMen.com. Good lawyers doing good things for good men.
A deeper look at the 2020 Hawks roster.
Let's go!
And right before I introduce this, because it's a developing story, I do want to add a two-second update for Patrick Mahomes. From Adam Schefter, Patrick Mahomes' 10-year extension is worth $450 million. That injury guarantee is $140 million. The contract doesn't contain language that ties its value to a percentage of the salary cap. So still the richest deal in sports history. That's the latest on that. All right. Back to Know Your Hawks. This is a game. Normally, this is Jake's introduction, but I'm going to try to nail it. This is a game that Jake introduced to us. He used to play with Russell Wilson and the other guys in the quarterback room, where Carl Tater Smith challenged them to get to know everyone on the roster. You should know who it is that's on your team, not just their stats and not just what college they went to, but what's their family like? Where are they from? Maybe anything that makes them special and unique that you could talk about with them. And we've talked about all kinds of stuff like that. Geno Smith went to an art school for middle school. He was really into art. We learned that Phil Haynes played basketball all through high school and switched to football for the first time as, like, a senior or something like that. So you find out all kinds of really cool stuff about players. And we're going to continue that now with a look at center Joey Hunt. Joey Hunt was born and raised in El Campo, Texas. One of four kids, he was a three-star defensive tackle in high school, but he also played center, obviously. He committed to play at TCU over Stanford and Texas Tech. As a sophomore in 2013 at TCU, he started all 12 games, including one start at right guard. As a junior, he started all 13 games at center and earned second-team All-Big 12 honors. In 2015, that was his best season, he was named a first-team All-Big 12, but missed his final three games due to injury. So a little bit of trivia here. He was a center for Trayvon Boykin, who later became a Seahawks teammate, though obviously he's not currently on the team. Hunt became a sixth-round pick for the Seahawks in the 2016 NFL draft at number 215 overall. Nailed it. Spent most of his first season on the practice squad, but as we all know, he saw his most extensive playing time in 2019 when he made eight starts in place of Justin Britt, who suffered an ACL tear in a Week 8 game against the Falcons. By the way, as I was looking over this and writing up these notes today, didn't it feel like Justin Britt tore his ACL much earlier in the season? This last season felt like the longest season ever, which maybe we say every year because I remember the season prior talking about how Brandon Marshall was there for two games, and it was so weird thinking that. But anyways, yeah, Justin Britt. Week 8. Hunt will have his work cut out for him this season, though. So he was a restricted free agent heading into 2020, but he re-signed with Seattle as part of his original round tender, which is effectively a one-year contract. So Joey Hunt will once again become a free agent in 2021 unless the Seahawks sign him to a longer-term deal. He'll have his work cut out for him this season, though, because even though Seattle released longtime veteran Justin Britt, clearing the way for competition at center, they also added ex-Steelers center B.J. Finney, and I think it's notable that Finney was the Seahawks' very first addition from outside the organization, and they offered him a two-year, $8 million contract. So it's really a competition between Hunt and Finney as to who can get the job this year, and if Jake was here, I would bet that he has his money on B.J. Finney. But we'll see. Well, Joey Hunt going to get out there and battle for it. Likeable guy.
Okay, I'm going to give you a really obscure reference here. Joey Hunt looks like he should be a musician. Does he not? He's got that long hair.
He's got the long hair.
He's got the beard. If you go to his Wikipedia page, I mean, that's a good picture of him. But he looks like he should be in a band. Okay, he really does. And as you were talking, it actually hit me.
Mm-hmm.
What musician he looks like. If you Google the name Joe English, he was the drummer for Paul McCartney's band in the 70s named Wings. I know you guys haven't heard of him, but I know people in our audience have. If you go to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 picture over in Google Images, that is Joey Hunt, 2-A-T. He looks exactly like my man Joe English getting it done for Paul McCartney in the 70s. So Joey Hunt, also a rock star. But he weighs about 300 pounds.
He's 6'2", 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. Which
that's
is about 2 inches
at. Do you
shorter.
Think he's that big?
Yeah. You know what? With Joey Hunt, it's not that he's a small guy. I think people have this perception that he's like 5'10", which he's not. It's just that the rest of the offensive line is much larger. And to be honest, like normally a center would be 2 inches or so taller. So B.J. Finney does have the advantage there. He's, I believe 6'4", 317. I looked it up earlier today. I think he's 6'4", 317. So he does have the height and weight advantage over Joey Hunt.
He's lasted on this team. I mean, this will be his fifth year with the organization. That's a heck of a long time mm-hmm. for a guy to be with a team, a guy who's small for a center, a guy who's supposed to be a backup. I mean, he's the definition of a journeyman. A guy, you know, teams could use, but certainly not a guy you would think would remain in one place all this time. But here he has, and whenever he's not, I won't say whenever he's been called upon, but in a lot of cases when called upon, he has done his job admirably. He's not the talent level of like a first team all pro center. You're just not going to get that kind of performance out of him. But after Justin Britt went down, I thought he did okay. On occasion, did he get pushed around? Yes. I think by that game in LA against the Rams, Aaron Donald kind of had his way with him. But Aaron Donald has his way with a lot of guys. So I'll cut Mr. Hunt a break there. Anything else you want to add about Joey Hunt?
No, I mean, I think that it'll be fun to, when whatever version of training camp we have kicks off, I think the offensive line, it's hard to get people as into offensive linemen in like an offensive line competition as they would be for like a wide receiver competition, especially when you get into camp, because wide receiver is one of the more fun positions to watch in camp because no one can hit anyone. But I do think that it'll be one of the more interesting conversations, and so I do look forward to revisiting this topic, and I think it'll help that we all know these linemen beforehand.
All right, for quiz purposes on Thursday, because I'm off Friday, what I have here, he's from El Campo, Texas, committed to TCU over Stanford and Texas Tech. Junior year, second team, all Big 12. Senior year, first team, all Big 12. Was the center for Trayvon Boykin, was picked at 215 overall. What round is that?
That's
sixth round. All right, I hope that's all I have to know, because those are all the notes.
You're good.
All right, you're not going to spring any surprise Hunt.
What is Joey Hunt's astrological sign? Tom, everyone always makes fun of the fact that you get the hard questions. Like, Tom, how tall was Joey Hunt exactly to the inch in fourth grade? Jake, what's your favorite color?
I'll tell you what. his astrological sign. He was born February 22nd, so he's got to be a Pisces. Do you know his height in the metric system?
No.
No.
1.88 meters. Take that.
So 188 centimeters.
Yeah. 134 kilograms.
Nailed it. That's how we're going to do all the profiles from now on.
Yeah. You have to ask Jake, what is Joey Hunt's weight in kilograms? See if he gets that.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.
He won't. Stump him with that one. All right. Let's want to get, you know, what we're not going to do today. We're not going to do NFL headlines. Why? Because there's some baseball headlines here as we enter baseball season or attempt to. Do we have MLB music, Curtis?
Or you could try to find some.
You could just sing it.
Okay.
Under your breath. You know what? Do this.
Just keep this music going until you find some cool MLB music, like from baseball to.
There we go. That works. I like it.
Oh, this is the old school Fox baseball thing,
right? Oh, yeah.
Right?
Da, da, da. This is a banger. They should have never gotten rid of this and gone to the NFL music.
Yeah, why do that?
Exactly.
The music they use now is so identified with NFL. Like, why? Whatever, it's Fox. All right. You want to present me the topics here, Stacey Bays?
Yeah, let's go. Okay. So we'll start with the fact that, again, some more players opting out of the 2020 season. Among those are Felix Hernandez and David Price. They certainly aren't the only two, but Felix Hernandez opting out of the season, certainly catching some eyes from people in Seattle. Tom,
do you make of... Good.
Oh, I was going to say, would you have an issue as another player on a team with a guy opting out of a season? I don't think that I would in this season, but I'm curious as to what you think.
I don't think I would. I mean, the only way I could compare that is, like, if you or Jake decided, you know what, I'm not going to work for
health
reasons.
Yeah.
And the rest of us have to go. I mean, look, if we all have the option to opt out, then there's really not much to be upset over, right? If only certain players had the option to say, you know what, I'm not doing this, that would be really unfair. But no, I don't think it's a... like you're letting your team down necessarily in what's especially a weird season. Now with Felix Hernandez, look, there's doubt over whether or not people thought he was going to make the Braves coming out of spring training. So if he's going to opt out this year, does anybody think that we're going to see him next year?
It's an important
question. Like, whether
it's
with the Braves or any other team. It is. I mean, like, if we've seen Felix's last start and his career really has ended as a member of the Mariners, I mean, I guess that's sad in a way, but that also feels right.
Like, yeah.
I go back and forth on whether I wish him luck, sure. Like, I would have wanted to see him pitch, but with another team, like, eh. Like, there's something
you
to
already
be said
had some
for
mixed
playing.
Feelings.
Well, yeah, there's something to be said, I think, in this era for playing the entirety of your career with one team. I mean, that is just unbelievably rare. For that to happen, to not chase the big money somewhere else. Not that he didn't get big money here, but he could have gotten big money elsewhere, right? He decided that he wanted to remain here for that money, and we saw him cry the day he did it. So obviously he wanted to be a member of the Seattle Mariners. But I think that he's probably done if this is indeed the case. As for David Price, I don't blame him either. He's done a lot of great things lately. Remember, he was the one who donated $1,000 a pop to all the minor league
Which
Dodgers.
Is awesome.
Remember when they were concerned about whether or not they were going to get their stipend? I think they ended up getting both, but that's terrific that David Price thought to do that for his minor league counterparts down there. So good for him, too. I am a little confused, though, as to why it seems like it's only superstar players, or at least star players, that are opting out.
I think it's just the ones we've heard
about. The ones.
I think that's what it is. I mean, I know that training camps have started up, and so, you know, by now you would have found out if guys didn't. It could be that guys that are making less and aren't super, you know, big players are guys that need the money, and so that's why they're coming here. But, Next story: the Nationals, Astros, and Cardinals canceled their workouts on Monday. because they had delayed test results. It sounds like the A's did the same on Sunday. The Angels had testers not show up to camp on one day, and this is all from a report in The Athletic about a delay in coronavirus testing. So this already becomes a bit of, I don't know that teams are complaining about unfair advantages. Like, you have a delay in testing, which means you get one less day of training. I don't know that teams are that upset about it yet, but if it continues, I can absolutely see it becoming a problem. Shannon Dreyer, actually, our own Shannon Dreyer, asked Scott Servais about this the other day, and he seemed to imply that the Mariners had not had the same kind of issues with a delay in testing, although the fact that it's happened with a handful of teams this early in training camp, literally the first week of spring training 2.0, I think is an issue.
Mike Rizzo of the Nationals, he's their GM. I mean, I'll read part of his quote from this morning. When they shut down their practices, they said, or he said, "We will not sacrifice the health and safety of our players, staff, and their families. Major League Baseball needs to work quickly to resolve these issues with their process and their lab. Otherwise, summer camp and the 2020 season are at risk." So Rizzo definitely not mincing words there. But here's the thing. If guys test positive once the season's begun, are you going to shut it down every time that happens? Or are you just going to quarantine that one player?
I think it's going to be that.
And then test the others and keep on testing and testing and testing. What if they all test positive but they're asymptomatic?
Then you have to shut it down. Because even if someone's asymptomatic, you can't have them with a positive test going out and potentially infecting other people. Coaches,
what are you
going to
do, forfeit the game, though?
Well, I think that's the question the MLB will have to face if it happens, and they're probably hoping that at all costs they can avoid it. They're probably hoping that if there's a breakout, we can very quickly trace it and isolate those player or three players that tested positive, and they're probably hoping that at no point you get to the point where you have more than 10, 12 players at a time that have tested positive, because even though you have these taxi squads and you can bring guys in, you're going to have clubs that are going to be upset about a competitive disadvantage. And I know that it's a season that a lot of people aren't really counting, but I wouldn't be shocked if teams start saying something's really unfair when half their squad is down. And it just feels dangerous at that point.
Well, certainly. If they really do adhere to the protocols and they keep the players, I'll say, not sequestered isn't the right word, but they keep them separate from the general public. They keep the coaches separate from the general public. Really, none of them should test positive, right? I guess the only way they get it is if a family member is out, having lunch somewhere or something, right? They run into somebody who's got it, and then they give it to the player. And then all of a sudden it becomes an issue. But that's why I kind of like the bubble idea with the NBA players. Although, who knows whether they'll be able to execute that thing to a T.
Well, and that's why I think the NFL is probably watching the MLB, hoping that their version works out. Because I don't know how, realistically, a league like that can just go to one area. The Rangers confirmed that Joey Gallo has tested positive for COVID-19. One thing I will add to this story is that I am unsure on how teams are reporting positive COVID tests, because even though reporters are saying that he's tested positive, we heard DePoto, I believe, say that they aren't going to report, or was it Service, say that they aren't going to report when a player in particular tests positive. It's just going to be something you'll have to assume.
You know what? I thought that same thing. Remember when the Ezekiel Elliott
and he said
leaked out and he was all mad about it?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't blame him, because that shouldn't be public. And now all of a sudden they're getting specific with names. Why? How did that happen?
I think it really is just it's a story. It's there. I think that there's a weird line between newsworthy and then getting in on someone's personal business. And when newsworthy is health, it becomes a very thin line that you have to walk, because it is newsworthy if players test positive for COVID in a league that's trying to get going. But it's also you're breaching some privacy laws when you start reporting on people who test positive for whatever illness.
Maybe we talked about this a little bit. If you're not admitted to the hospital, you're not signing a HIPAA waiver. I don't know what they're signing and what they're not for whatever testing and treatment they have down there with the teams, but maybe they're just their HIPAA rights are not applicable. Mm-hmm. And so this news is just going to get out when it gets out. I don't know. How about Tanaka? Did you see he took a liner off the head?
I cannot believe he's okay. Did you see the video?
I did.
Hitting his head. And he, even at the end of the video, he's standing up, he's talking to people, and it sounds like he's not seriously injured. I cannot believe that.
A couple of years ago, God, I forget what year it was. I think it was 2016. I was up in the press box at a Mariner game, and Matt Shoemaker of the Angels was pitching, and Kyle Seager came up and line one off his head. I will never forget the sound of the ball striking his head. It is the most, one of the most uncomfortable sounds, ugly sounds you will ever hear. Now, certain guys respond okay after taking a liner to the head. Certain guys don't. I remember one year, Matt Clement of the Red Sox, this is in like 2005, he took one off the bat of, I think, Carl Crawford down in Tampa. Never the same.
Yeah.
Never the same after that. Shoemaker, he hadn't been the same since. In fact, I'm not even sure if he's playing anymore. But it just, you know, you have that experience one time. Once is enough to shake you up. And I don't need to have that happen to me to know that. So I hope Tanaka's okay. He has been nothing but good for the Yankees ever since he's been there. I mean, a lot of players come over from Japan. They're good for a couple of years, and then they kind of flame out. He has been very, very productive for the Yankees in the 6 years he's been there. He's been their horse, actually. He was hurt a little bit in the beginning of his career there, and from then on, he's basically been okay. So I hope things turn out okay for him. Coming up next, I got three questions for Stacey and Curtis. Plus, we'll give you your Mariner Classic of the Night. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
Stacey, you ever have so many windows open that you can't find what you're looking for?
Yeah, that was me during the last two segments. I'm like trying to work on one monitor versus two, and I'm opening the wrong windows.
I have 19 windows open.
That's
right
irresponsible,
now.
Tom. You need
it
to
really
close
is.
Tabs.
I don't. Good God! All right. So, by the way, something I didn't tell you before: Know Your Seahawks is brought to you each day by Divorce Lawyers for Men. .com. Okay, our Mariners Classics. This has been really fun that we've been doing this. I hope you guys have been enjoying it while there's been no actual baseball. Every time I go out and I drive around at about, you know, well, between 7 and 10, I try to take a listen. We're going to give you the Mariners' 116th win from the 2001 season. That's October 6th of 2001 against Texas. Man, 116 wins. What it must have been like around here at that time. I mean, you didn't really have the Seahawks doing much, but 116 wins, you're winning more than two-thirds of every game, right? Like, you're winning at a higher, you're playing 700 baseball. You're winning essentially 7 out of every 10 games. I mean, for a team that wasn't as star-studded as some of the previous incarnations, that's just crazy that they were able to do that. So 116th win comes tonight. 7-10. Go ahead.
You know who was on that Texas Rangers team that the Mariners beat that night? Pat Mahomes Sr.
Who was on it?
Whoa!
Pat Mahomes Sr. was on that team?
He was on that team.
I wonder if Patrick Mahomes was there.
He may have been.
Little baby Pat at the game.
Well, hold on a second. Pat Mahomes is 24 now.
When was this
game? That was 19 years ago. So he was 5 years old?
Yeah. He was born in... Anyone born mid-90s or later, it's weird to me that they're even in double-digit ages, but then I realize that that's just literally how much time has passed. Like, if you were born in 1995, I don't know how you're not six. It's weird to me.
That'll pass. Oh, man. I'm actually just looking up how much money Pat Mahomes made compared to his son. Let's see. He made a total of, oh, my God. Do you want to guess how much Pat Mahomes made, both of you?
Okay. $2
million. I'm going to say the original Pat Mahomes made $21
million. He made a total of $2.6
million. Woo! Wow.
Look at that.
Oh, my God. He never made $1 million in his career ever. When he was with the Twins those first 5 years, he was making like $100,000, $200,000. Then that got up to about $250,000 by the time he signed with the Mets and Rangers. But, man, 2.6. He's got to have blown through that by now, right? Because you blow – how long would it take you to blow through $2.6 million? Probably not – over the course of 19 years, probably not that long.
At what point is Pat Mahomes Jr. expected to pay for every meal when he's out with his parents?
Today.
Sometimes when you go and eat out with your parents, they normally foot the bill just because it's like...
Because they're parents.
Yeah, because they're parents. They take care of you. But now I feel like Pat Mahomes, he's got to be...
That's got to start today.
Bill. Yeah.
There's no way. If I'm your mother or father, I'm just staring at you the entire time. I'm not even going to pretend to reach for my wallet. I'm going to be like, look. I got up at 3 a.m. when you were crying. I think you can cover this bill from Applebee's. Thanks, Pat.
My parents still, if I made Patrick Mahomes money, the money that he just got awarded with today, if I went out to dinner with my parents, they would still insist on taking the bill. They'd be like, oh, Tommy, it's okay. We got it.
Oh, that's adorable.
They absolutely would. Oh, man. Patrick Mahomes money. That's unbelievable. What was I just going to ask a second ago? We were talking before about some of the first purchases we would make if we got Patrick Mahomes type money, $400 million plus. By the way, did we figure out whether that was tied to the salary cap or not? Did you say before that it wasn't?
Okay, so there's been conflicting reports, not so much conflicting reports as a development since we don't know a lot about the deal. So all of this is from Adam Schefter. He said that he had spoken to sources who made it seem as though it was tied to a percentage of the cap, even though the Chiefs had been adamant they wouldn't do that. And then in his second most recent tweet, he says, the contract does not contain language that ties its value to a percentage of the salary cap. So then it sounds like it'll be just an actual cap number per year rather than
actual.
Amount.
I got it.
Yeah. Cap hit.
An amount. Right. So. All right, so it doesn't necessarily appreciate over the years
right.
in direct correlation with the salary cap. I see. Okay, that's a better deal for Kansas City. Because before I was saying, well, if you're investing in a quarterback over the course of 10 years, and you're going to give him
like 13%
a percentage of right of your appreciating salary cap every single year, what's going to happen when he's washed up in the last or injured? Right. I mean, like we went through some of the guys who have gotten that long of a deal before, guys like Donovan McNabb, Drew Bledsoe, Michael Vick. I think there was one other in there. None of those guys played out the length of those contracts with those teams. So the only reason why they were able to go to different teams is because their contracts by that point were affordable. If Patrick Mahomes was making a percentage of the cap in, say, 2029, and he was washed up, nobody else is going to want to assume that contract, right? Nobody would want to do that if they had to pay him that much, and he was either struggling with injuries or his career had gone down the tubes or something. Nobody would want to do that. So that makes more sense to me. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Let's go through some of the questions that I asked before since we're running a little bit low on time here. How big of a shame is it to you guys that Felix won't be playing this season? What do you think, Stacey?
It's more of a, I was hoping that this would work out for him. I don't think it's something where he's missing out on the prime of his career. Like it sounds bad, but I would feel worse for a lot of other players. Like if you get injured with a serious injury and you're at your height and you're 26, then then I feel a little worse for you versus you're looking for a second chance.
Yeah, that's tragic.
It's really sad.
And all of a sudden it goes out the window I don't know, Curtis, like Mark Pryor, like Dusty Baker runs you out there every night for 9 innings and all of a sudden you blow out your shoulder and it's over. You know, I mean, that happens too. But in the case of Felix, you know, Felix did have a wonderful career. He was dominant for a relatively short period of time, but I don't know. Did you want to watch him anymore? Is it best just left where it is?
I think it's best just left where it is. There's the only way he can, you know, kind of resurrect any sort of, those old timey feelings is if he goes out and has a nice second chapter to his career. Taking this season off, I guess, like clearing his head or whatever. But right now, it just does not seem like, you know, that 10 starts would have been worth it to him to go out there. And, you know, what if he's just the same Felix that we saw the last 2 or 3 years? And on top of that, you're pitching in a pandemic. It's not the ideal scenario. Take some time off, come back again next year. I would imagine the Braves would still have interest in him next year. On a minor league deal, maybe pitch in much more normal circumstances rather than what we're seeing now. Because it's not like Felix didn't come back for the summer camp here. He showed up to Braves summer camp in Atlanta for a couple of days and then made his decision. So maybe it was just like a wait and see kind of thing for him, and then ultimately he came up to his final decision.
You know what would have been interesting is if we had a regular season this year, say he started like 15 games and he actually pitched pretty well. I mean, would the Mariners then have had interest in him the following year? It's like, you know what? Felix didn't pitch so bad. I mean, part of me thinks that this organization just wanted to cut ties and say, look, you were a warrior for this team. Good luck. But you know what they did? I mean, they welcomed Taijuan Walker back. Taijuan Walker currently is on this roster. Now, he's a lot younger and still could have a lot more career to go than Felix. But he didn't show a whole heck of a lot the first time around. They let him go. They traded him, actually. He was in the Mitch Haniger trade. They traded him to Arizona. He looked okay before he got hurt. Now they're welcoming him back just to see what they can get out of him. I mean, you know, if Felix were to pitch well this year, I don't know.
I feel like it goes against everything that they're trying to plan on. I don't know why Taijuan Walker somehow just doesn't fall into the same category for me. But if you're planning for the future and you're risking a ton of losses because you're going to be, you know, fielding one of the league's youngest teams on purpose and you know you've got a lot of experience, it seems like a step backward then to add an older player, even if it's one that you love and you have respect for.
Yeah. Are you talking about with Felix or Walker?
Felix.
Okay. Yeah. Cause Walker is here ostensibly probably just for this year, depending on how well he pitches, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe he doesn't make the team at all. I don't know, but he's not part of the future. He's just part of right now because they need some live bodies, live arms in the pitching rotation to sort of set the table for the rookies that are coming up, the guys that still need to develop. We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
You know, Stacey, we were talking before about what we would do if we were to suddenly inherit Patrick Mahomes type money.
Yes.
You know what I would do? This has always been one of my dreams because it's been looming over my head for the last 20 years.
Wow.
I really wanted to be able to pay my parents back for the money they spent on college, but I'll never be able to do that. It just costs too much.
That's not what I thought you'd say. So wait, I said I would want to buy a blimp and a mansion, and you want to pay your parents back for college.
They spent so much money for me to go to Indiana University. Like, it's sick. It's really ridiculous that higher education costs that much. But like, and to be honest, I don't even know the total amount. But it was always kind of my dream, like, you know, I figured once I got going, I might be able to pay him back. But I'll never be able to do that. It's a shame.
Well, then it you really would. Is. I mean, you just have to become an NFL prodigy. There's and still time.
Yeah, like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Go out there.
41-year-old radio host. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 41-year-old radio host suddenly takes over the Seattle Seahawks with the help of speed trainer.
Look out, Russell. Move over. There's a new sheriff in town. His name is Tom Wassel. How far do you think you could throw a football?
A regulation size football.
Regulation
not
size.
That far.
Like 15 yards?
Not that far.
That's okay.
No, maybe longer. Maybe more than that. I mean, just Bob Stelton and I.
Take over the short game.
We used to go out to the VMAC, and when we would be in like a tape segment, we'd go out on the field and toss each other the football. I know that I could, you know, I could get it going a little bit, but not, you know. I couldn't quarterback a high school team. Let's put it that way.
We should, if we're able to do the huddle still for this year, we should do that with Jake and just film his disappointment with us while we pass back and forth to him. He will be physically disgusted. I've never seen Jake more upset than when I throw a football.
Well, what's his expectations?
That's the thing.
Both NFL level.
It's not even that I'm awful. I am, but it's just that he literally his job is to train people to do this, and so, you know, it's just.
If I gave Jake a bass guitar or a regular guitar, and he wouldn't know how to make one note, I wouldn't be disappointed in him because he doesn't have any training.
Well, and he could throw that guitar like 50 yards.
That's true. He could wing that thing.
Get that thing out of a cannon.
Hey, one other thing I wanted to say about Patrick Mahomes. So if this deal is not tied to the salary cap and it's just your average deal with like a regular structure, he gets a whole bunch of money, some of which is guaranteed. Do you think the 10-year aspect of it is more symbolic than anything? Because they can cut him at any point. Like if for some reason he gets hurt or whatever happens.
I don't think it's symbolic. I think it's a very real commitment and some risk to go along with that. And usually those deals, there's probably an out somewhere in the contract. I mean, a 10-year deal, I'd have to think there would be. And I'd have to think that, you know, there's quite a bit of money that's loaded into the second half of that. But I don't know. I don't think it's just symbolic. I think the Chiefs made a very huge investment in their quarterback because they believe in him.
But why give him a deal that long? Like, if you're Patrick Mahomes, why wouldn't you want to hit free agency?
Because I think they're counting
that. And get another contract offer.
I think what the Chiefs are probably counting on is, look, for the first, this isn't how exactly it's going to be, but I'm assuming this is kind of the logic. For the first 5 years of this deal, Patrick Mahomes is going to be getting paid a ton of money. But for the last like 3, 4, maybe 5 years, it's going to start to average out, assuming the league salary cap keeps growing at its pace. So all of a sudden, you're getting a bargain in the second half of that deal by Patrick Mahomes making maybe slightly less than he would if he were to just hit the open market at, you know, 29 or so.
But he's going to want to re-up that at some point.
How can he? It's a 10-year deal.
Otherwise, he could do what Earl Thomas did. I mean, he could just force his way out. Players have that power.
Well, I mean, I think that's what the Chiefs are avoiding then is, hey, maybe we're paying you $45 million when you're 29 and another team would have offered you 50, but guess what? We signed you to a 10-year deal. So in that sense, I mean, if he ends up being as successful as he has been, or even a fraction, not a fraction, you don't have to be league MVP every single year or win a Super Bowl, but if you continue to be the kind of player you are, I think it's a bargain.
The reason why I say it's symbolic is because there's not precedent for a quarterback lasting that length of a contract, and they could still cut him at any point if they need to. So the 10, like any NFL contract, you don't really look at the length and say, okay, well, this guy's tied to the team for that long. They never are. They always get cut. With this quarterback and how young he is, maybe not. Maybe not. But even from his side, like I just said, why wouldn't you want to hit free agency in, say, 5 years or so, and drive the price up higher than it would be by the time he gets there under this contract.
That's the gamble that Mahomes is making too. It's not just the Chiefs. Mahomes is also signing this deal knowing that,
it's
double-sided. What if I become what if I become even better than I am, but I'm going to be making $5 million plus less than a couple other quarterbacks in the latter half of my deal, even if I'm like lapping them in performance.
You think he's going to be that good?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Or better. Do you think he's going to be that much better than he is right now?
I asked Jake about it the other day because, and I know Brock has talked about this too, and I think I asked Brock a similar question. And I was like, hey, from the eyes of a quarterback, it's one thing for me as someone who covers the NFL, and I've only exclusively covered one team, so I don't regularly watch other NFL games. But I can't tell if it's just hype. And if it's just that Patrick Mahomes is the new hot thing that came out and he's part of this really, really awesome offense with Andy Reid there and all these weapons, I can't tell if it's just the best situation or if he genuinely is a special kind of talent. And both Brock and Jake said, no, this guy has it. Like, he's legit. But it does help that he's in, like, a great system. And all that means is that he gets every chance to be as good as he is. He's not held back. But both of them, I mean, that's two, you know, quarterbacks who say, like, yeah, this guy's special.
Russell Wilson has become a better quarterback over the years, in part because he's become a more experienced, smarter quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Mahomes has that to go. What we've seen so far, the scary part is that it's system plus raw talent. What about system plus raw talent plus experience?
Aren't you glad they're in the AFC?
Yeah, but we got enough to contend with. I'd rather be in the AFC West than the NFC West, wouldn't you?
Yeah. The NFC's loaded. The last thing you need is for Patrick Mahomes to get into it.
Oh, we've got enough to deal with Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Eek. We didn't really get to the Antonio Brown clowny stuff that much today. Maybe we'll get to more of that tomorrow. Plus, whoever gets the next 10-year deal from their team, we'll talk about that too. See you tomorrow, 710 ESPN Seattle.